but she can help these people. I know it's naive, but she's my best friend, and this is one of the only positive things that actually energizes her lately. She doesn't sleep. Her gray eyes are swollen 99% of the time. She's struggling with getting over a catastrophic breakup, the death of her father, moving to a new place, and not getting accepted into NYU. That's a lot for one person to carry on their back. When I met Tessa a year ago, she was so different. Rochelle was the same, a beautiful blonde with pretty eyes, a soft voice, and a high GPA. The first time I talked to her, I felt like I had met the female version of myself. We immediately bonded over being the first two to arrive in the lecture hall our first day of college. Tessa and I got closer as her relationship with Harden developed. I watched as she fell in love with him, and he fell harder, and they both fell apart. I watched them rip each other apart and then stitch each wound back together. I watched them become one another's everything, then their nothing, then everything again. I had trouble picking sides during the war. It wasn't without casualties. It was just too complicated and messy. So now I'm taking my cue from Bella Swan and staying neutral, like Switzerland. Yikes, I'm referencing Twilight. I need caffeine, pronto. When I walk into the kitchen, Tessa is sitting at the small table with her phone in her hand. Morning. I nod to her and switch on the Nespresso machine. I've become somewhat of a coffee snob since working at Grind. It helps to have a roommate who's equally obsessed. Not as picky, but even more addicted than I am. Morning, sunshine, Tessa says distractedly, at first barely glancing up from her phone, but then her eyes go straight to the gash above my eyebrow and concern takes over her expression. After rubbing some Neosporin on it this morning, I was happy to be able to omit the Disney Band-Aid. I'm fine, but damn, that was embarrassing. I grab a pot of Brazilian espresso and push it into the machine. The counter space in here is minimal, and the thing takes up half the room between the off-white fridge and the microwave, but it's a necessity. Tessa smiles, biting her lip. A little, she agrees, and covers her mouth to stifle her amusement. I wish she would laugh. I want her to remember how it feels. I glance over at her miniature coffee cup. It's empty. Need a refill? Do you work today? I ask. She sighs, picks up her phone, then puts it back down. I do. Her eyes are stained with angry red lines again, bloodshot from the tears soaked into her pillowcase. I didn't hear crying last night, but that doesn't mean she wasn't. She's slightly better at hiding her feelings lately, or so she thinks. Yes to both. Work and want more coffee, please, she clarifies with a half smile. Then she clears her throat and her eyes fall to the table as she asks, Do you know which days Harden will be here yet? Not yet. We're still a few weeks away, so he hasn't told me. You know how he is. I shrug my shoulders. If anyone knows Harden, it's her. You're sure this is okay, right? Because, you know, if you aren't, I can have him stay at a hotel or something, I offer. I would never want her to be uncomfortable in her own apartment. Harden would fight me over this, but I don't care. She forces a smile. No, no, it's fine. This is your place. And yours, I remind her. I put the first cup of espresso into the freezer for Tessa. She's doing this thing lately where she only drinks cold coffee. My suspicion is that even something as simple as a warm cup of coffee reminds her of that boy. I'm going to pick up extra shifts at Lookout. I'm almost done with training anyway. They're letting me do brunch and dinner today. My chest aches for my friend, and for once, my loneliness doesn't seem so bad compared to the alternative of her shattered heart. If you change your mind, I won't. I'm fine. It's been, what? She shrugs. 4 months or something? She's lying through her teeth, but nothing good is going to come from me calling her out on it. Sometimes you have to let people feel what they need to feel. Hide what they think they need to hide and process it however they do. The espresso burns my throat. It's thick and strong, and suddenly I have more energy than I did 2 seconds ago. Yes, I'm aware that it's a mental thing, and no, I don't care. I throw the little cup into the sink and grab my sweatshirt from the back of the chair. My running shoes are by the door, lined up in a straight row with the other shoes, Tessa's doing. I slip them on and head out. Chapter 5. The air is crisp, and I can actually smell fall in the air. Fall has always been my favorite season. I love waiting for the seasons to change, watching the leaves go from green to brown, smelling the cedar in the air. Football season leads to hockey season, and hockey season leads to my life being interesting for a little while. I've always loved waiting for the sports seasons to start, raking the yard with my mom, and jumping into big messy piles of loose leaves, then stuffing them into plastic bags with pumpkin faces printed on them. We always had so many leaves to deal with because of the two massive birch trees in the front yard. Fall in Michigan never lasted long enough, though. By the third football game, the gloves and coats came out full force. And while I was sad to see fall go, I've always liked the bite of the cold air on my skin. Unlike most people, I thrive in winter. For me, the cold means sports, holidays, and a crapload of sweets piled on the kitchen counter. Dakota always hated the cold. The way her nose would turn red and her curly hair would dry out drove her insane. She always looked cute, wrapped up in layers of sweaters, and I swear to you, the girl wore mittens in September. The best park to run the track in Brooklyn happens to be a bit far from my apartment. McCarran Park joins the two hippest parts of Brooklyn, Greenpoint and Williamsburg. Full beards and lumberjack flannels come out in droves in this part of the city. The locals bring their black-framed glasses and establish tiny little restaurants with dim lighting and small plates of heaven. I don't quite understand why men in their 20s want to dress like men in their 70s, but the food that surrounds the cool kids here is well worth having to stare into a crowd of men with handlebar mustaches. The walk to my favorite park is a little over 20 minutes, so I usually run there, then run for an hour, then cool down during the walk home. I pass a woman loading a tiny baby into a running stroller. My knee hurts, but if she can run with a baby in a stroller, I'll be just fine. 2 minutes into running, the ache in my knee shifts into a throbbing, sharp pain. 30 seconds later, the pain is shooting from muscle to muscle. I feel every step from my fall in the shower. Forget this. I'm off today, and even if my leg's acting up, I don't want to sit in the house on my first Saturday off since I started working. Tessa has to work tonight. In addition to her telling me, I saw it written on her little planner board on the fridge. Deciding to call my mom, I pull my phone out and sit down on a bench. She's due soon, and I can feel her nerves from here. She'll be the best mom my little sister could be blessed with, whether she believes it or not. My mom doesn't answer. Well, my only friend is busy, and my mom didn't answer, meaning I don't know what to do next. I'm officially a loser. My sneakers hit the pavement, and I start counting the steps as I walk. The pain in my knee isn't too bad as long as I'm walking instead of pushing my body to run. On your left, a woman running with a stroller calls as she passes me. She's pregnant, and the stroller has two chubby babies inside. This lady has her hands full. This is a trend in Brooklyn, lots of babies and the strollers to match. I've even seen people pushing their strollers, baby and all, into bars in the early evening. I have nothing to do. I'm a 20-year-old college student living what is purportedly the greatest city in the world, and I have absolutely nothing to do on my day off. I feel sorry for myself. Not really, but I would rather wallow and complain about my boring life than attempt to make new friends. I don't know where to begin making friends. NYU isn't as friendly as WCU. And if Tessa hadn't spoken to me first, I probably wouldn't have made any friends there either. Tessa is the first person I've started a friendship with since Carter died. Harden isn't included in this because that was a much more complicated situation to start. He acted like he hated me, but I had a feeling it wasn't as clear-cut as it seemed even then. Really, it was more that he felt the relationship between his dad and me was the epitome of everything that was wrong in his life. He was jealous, and I understand that now. It wasn't fair that I got the new and improved version of his previously alcoholic, emotionally abusive father. He loathed me for our shared love of sports, He hated the way his dad moved my mom and me into a big house, and he despised the car his dad bought me to drive. I knew he would be a difficult part of my new life, but I had no idea that I would be able to identify with his anger and see through his pain. I didn't grow up in a perfect home like he had assumed. I had a father who died before I had a chance to know him, and everyone around me tried to make up for that. My mom filled my childhood with stories about the man, trying to make up for his early death. His name was Alan Michael, and by her report, he was a well-liked man with long brown hair and big dreams. He wanted to be a rock star, my mom told me. Stories like that made me miss him without even knowing him. He was a humble man, she says, who passed away from natural causes at the unfairly young age of 25, when I was only 2. I would have been lucky to know him, but I didn't get the chance. Hardin's pain came from a different beast, but I've always believed that suffering is one thing people shouldn't compare. The biggest difference between my upbringing and Hardin's is due to our mothers. My mom was fortunate enough to have a good job with the city, and we were able to fall back on my dad's life insurance from his factory job. Hardin's mom worked long hours and barely brought in enough money to support the two of them. They had it much, much worse. It's hard for me to imagine my stepfather, Ken, the way Hardin knew him. To me, he'll always be the kind, lighthearted, and sober man he is today. The chancellor of WCU, no less. He's done so much for my mom, and he loves her as much as anyone could. He loves her more than liquor, and Hardin hated that. But now he understands that it was never a competition. If Ken could have, he would have chosen his son over the bottle long ago, but sometimes people just aren't as strong as we want them to be. All of Hardin's pain festered and grew into a fire that he couldn't contain. When everything hit the fan and Hardin, and the rest of us, found out that Ken isn't his birth father, the fire took one final massive breath and burned him one last time. He made the choice after that to take control of his life, his actions, and himself. Whatever his therapist is doing is working, and I'm glad. It's done wonders for my mom, who loves that angry boy as if she gave birth to him. I pass a couple holding hands as they walk their dog and feel even sorrier for myself. Should I be dating? I wouldn't even know where to start. I want the convenience of having someone around all the time, but I'm not sure I could actually date anyone other than Dakota. The whole dating game just seems so grueling, and it's only been 6 months since she broke up with me. Is she dating? Does she want to? I can't imagine anyone ever knowing me better than her, or making me as happy as she did. She's known me for so long, and it would take years for anyone to know me as well as she does. As she did. I know I don't have years to wait. I'm not getting any younger here, but thoughts like that aren't helping me move on. The couple stops for a kiss, and I look away, smiling because I'm happy for them. I'm happy for the strangers who don't have to spend their nights alone jerking off in the shower. Yeah, I sound bitter. I sound like Hardin. Speaking of Hardin, I can call him and blow at least 5 minutes before he hangs up on me. I pull my phone from my pocket and tap on his name. Yeah, he says before the second ring. One of your famous warm hellos. I cross the street, continuing my aimless trek in the general direction of my neighborhood. I should get to know this area better anyway. May as well start today. Warm as I'm gonna get. Do you need something in particular? An angry cab driver shouts out of his window at an elderly woman as she slowly crosses the street in front of his car. I'm looking at your future self, actually, I tell him, laughing at my insult. I watch the scene in front of me to make sure the woman makes it across okay. He doesn't laugh or ask what the hell I'm talking about. I'm bored and wanted to talk about your trip here, I say into the phone. What about it? I haven't booked the flight yet, but I'll be there around the 13th. Of September? Obviously. I can practically see his eyes roll from here. Are you staying in a hotel or at my apartment? The old woman reaches the other side of the street, and I watch as she goes up some steps into what I assume is her place. What does she want me to do? His voice is low, cautious. He doesn't have to say her name, hasn't in a while. She says she's fine with you staying at the apartment, but if she changes her mind, you know you have to go. I don't draw many lines between the two of them, but Tessa is my priority in this situation. She's the one I hear crying at night. She's the one who's trying to become whole again. I'm no fool. Harden is probably even worse off, but he has found himself a support system and a good therapist. Yeah, I fucking know that. I'm not in the least surprised by his annoyance. He can't stand anyone, including me, coming to Tessa's rescue. That's his job, he thinks, even though he's the one I'm protecting her from. I'm not going to do anything stupid. I have a few meetings and wanted to maybe hang out with you and her a bit. Honestly, I'm just happy to be in the same fucking state as her. I focus on the first part of his sentence. What kind of meetings? You're trying to move here already? I sure hope not. I'm not ready to be in the middle of a war zone again. I thought I would have at least a few more months before the magical forces of insanity brought those two back together again. Fuck no. It's just some shit for something I've been working on. I'll tell you when I have time to explain the whole thing, which is not now. Someone's calling on my other line. He hangs up before I can respond. I look at the time on my screen. 5 minutes and 12 seconds. A record. I cross the street and shove my phone back into my pocket. When I reach the corner, I look around to gauge where I am. Rows of brick townhouses and brownstones line both sides of the street. At the end of the block, a small art gallery shows prints of brightly colored abstract shapes hanging from string through its window. I haven't been inside, but I can only guess how expensive the pieces are. Landon, a familiar voice yells from across the street. I search the sidewalk and see Dakota. Damn that woman and her lack of clothing. She's dressed the same as yesterday. Tight spandex, workout shorts, and a sports bra. Her chest is on the smaller side, but she has the perkiest tits I've ever seen. Not that I've seen a lot of them, but hers are amazing. She starts waving at me as she crosses the intersection. And if this isn't some sort of fate-driven meetup, I don't know what is. Chapter 6. When she reaches me, Dakota immediately wraps her arms around my neck and pulls me to her. Our embrace lasts a few beats longer than usual, and when she pulls away, she leans her head on my arm. She's nearly a foot shorter than me, though I always liked to tease that her hair, that wild mass of curls, adds 4 inches onto her driver's license stats. Her nose is red and her hair is particularly wild. It's not cold yet, but it's windy and air off the nearby East River adds a chill. She's not dressed for the fall weather. In fact, she's not wearing much of anything. I'm not complaining. What are you doing over on this side of the tracks? I ask. She lives in Manhattan, yet this is the second time I've seen her in Brooklyn this week. Running? Across the Manhattan Bridge, then just kept trucking. Her eyes meet mine and then quickly dart to my forehead. What the hell happened to your face? Her fingers press against my skin and I wince. It's a long story. I touch over the sensitive spot with my fingers and feel the knot next to the cut. Did you get in a street brawl on your way here? She teases. And a tingling blossoms in my chest, me missing her even though she's standing right here. There's no way in hell I'm telling her what actually happened to my head. Or my knee. Gah, I feel like such a creep now that she's in front of me and I think of her every time I make myself come. Not quite. I shake my head and continue. I fell in the shower. But I like your version better. Definitely makes me sound cooler. I chuckle, looking down at her. My answer humors her, and she bounces on the heels of her bright pink Nikes. The yellow check mark on her shoes matches her sports bra, and the pink matches her tiny, tiny shorts. So, what are you up to? Do you want to get a coffee or something? She asks. Her eyes dart across the street, and she stares at the couple I saw earlier. Their hands are intertwined as they trot down the streets of Brooklyn. It's a romantic sight, him wrapping his coat around her shoulders, leaning down to kiss her hair. Dakota looks back up at me, and I wish I could hear what's going on inside her head. Does she miss me? Does seeing that couple happy and holding hands make her want my affection? She wants to hang out with me now. What does that mean? I have absolutely nothing to do, but I probably should act like I have somewhat of a life outside of school and work. I have some free time now. I shrug my shoulders, and she loops her arm through mine and leads the way. During the walk, I try to compile a list of normal conversation starters that would be nearly impossible to make come out awkward. I say nearly, because if anyone has a talent for turning normal situations uncomfortable, it's me. The walk to Starbucks is only a couple of blocks, but Dakota has been next to silent the entire time. Something is off with her, I can tell. "Are you cold?" I ask. I should have asked her earlier. She has to be cold. She's barely dressed. She looks up at me, and her Rudolph nose gives her away even though she's shaking her head. "Here." I gently pull away from her and pull my sweatshirt up over my head and hand it to her. It cuts me a little when she smells the gray fabric, just like she always used to. She was obsessed with wearing my hoodies when we were in high school. I had to buy one every other week to keep up with her thieving ways. "You still wear Spice Balm," she says, not asking. She bought me my first bottle of cologne for our first Christmas together, and one every year after. "Yep, some things never change." I watch as she pulls my sweatshirt down over her. Her curls push through first, and I help yank the fabric down over her mass of hair. The sweatshirt hits her just at her knees. She looks down at the design printed on the front. "Deathly Hallows." She touches the tip of the triangle with her unpainted nail. "Some things really do never change." I wait for her to smile, but it doesn't come. She smells the sweatshirt again. "Is it because you like the smell, or because you probably still have a stash from me?" Dakota laughs finally, but again, it's off. "You grab a table and I'll get the coffee," I offer. This is what we always did back in Saginaw. She would pick a table, usually by the window, and I would order our matching drinks. 2 mocha frappuccinos, an extra pump of liquid sugar for her, an extra shot of coffee for me. I always ordered 2 pieces of lemon pound cake, and she always ate the icing off of mine. My tastes have changed over the years, and I can't bring myself to drink the sugary milkshake disguised as coffee anymore. I order her a frappuccino and grab myself an Americano, 2 lemon pound cakes. While I'm waiting for my name to be called, I look over at the table where Dakota is sitting staring off into space with her hands tucked under her chin. "A mocha frapp and an Americano for London," the cute barista yells out the wrong name. She's perky as she sets the drinks on the counter, a huge smile on her face, the same as with all employees I see working for the mermaid chain. Dakota sits up slightly when I reach the table. I hand the large plastic cup to her and she examines mine. "What's that?" she asks. I sit down across from her and she brings my cup to her lips. "You'll hate that," I try to warn her. It's too late, her eyes are already closed and her face is already crumpling. She doesn't spit it out, but she wants to. Her cheeks are full of the espresso and water mixture and she looks like an adorable little squirrel as she struggles to swallow.
"Ew! How can you drink that?" she exclaims when she finally gets it down.
I slide her cup closer to her for a chaser.
"It tastes like straight tar. Ew!"
She's always been a tad dramatic. "I like it," I shrug, sipping the coffee.
"Since when do you drink fancy coffee?" Dakota scrunches her nose in disgust again.
I chuckle. "It's not fancy, it's only espresso and water," I say, defending my drink. She snorts.
"Sounds fancy to me."
There's something behind her words. I can't pinpoint it yet, but it's like she's mad at me for something that I'm not aware that I did. It's like we're still dating. "I got you some lemon cake, too. 2 pieces. I slide the brown paper bag across the table to her. She shakes her head and pushes her hands out, moving the bag back to my side of the table.
"I can't eat stuff like that anymore, and I'm already having this coffee as my lunch."
She scrunches her nose, and I remember her complaining about the change in her eating habits she had to make for her academy. She has to keep a strict diet, and lemon pound cake doesn't fit anywhere into that. "Sorry." I wince and fold the edges of the bags to close them. "I'll take it home and eat it later, when she's not around to witness my gluttony."
"How have you been?"
I ask her after a long stretch of silence.
It's like neither of us knows how to act when we aren't dating. We're acting as if we're strangers. We were friends for years before we dated. Our friendship grew as her brother and I became best friends. A chill runs down my spine and I wait for her to answer.
I'm okay, she sighs.
Her eyes close for a moment and I know she's lying. I reach across the table and rest my hand next to hers. It wouldn't be appropriate to touch her, but I want to so badly. You can tell me, you know. She sighs again, refusing. I'm your safe place, remember? I remind her of her claim on me. The first time I found her crying on her front steps with blood in her hair, I promised that I would always keep her safe. Neither time nor a breakup would change that. That's clearly not what she wanted to hear, and she pushes my hand away with a don't.
I don't need a safe place, Landon. I don't even know what I need because my life is fucking failing and I don't know how to fix it.
Her eyes are dark now, waiting for my response. Her life is failing? What does that even mean? How so? Is it school?
It's everything. Literally every damn thing in my life.
I'm not following. That's probably because she hasn't given me any information to allow me to help her. When I was about 15, I realized that I would do anything to make sure she was okay. I'm the fixer. I'm the one who fixes everything for everyone. Especially the curly-haired neighbor girl with an asshole for a father and a brother who could barely speak in his home without getting a bruise for the effort. Here we are, 5 years later, out of that slow, eroding town, away from that man, and some things really never change. Tell me something that I can go on. My hand covers hers, and she pulls away just like I knew she would. I let her. I always have. I didn't get the part that I've been training and training and training for the last 2 months. I thought this role was mine. I even let my GPA drop because I spent so much time rehearsing for my audition. She lets out a forced breath at the end and closes her eyes again. What happened with the audition? Why didn't you get it? I need more pieces of the puzzle before I can form a solution.
Because I'm not white,
she says it loud, certain. Her answer presses against the small bubble of anger that only holds things that I'm helpless over. I can fix a lot of shit, but I can't fix ignorance, as much as I would love to.
They said that?
I keep my voice down, even though I don't want to. They couldn't have possibly actually said that to a student. She shakes her head, huffing out a held-in breath.
No, they didn't have to. Every single lead they choose is white. I'm so tired of it.
I lean my back against the wooden chair and take the first sip of my coffee. Did you speak to someone? I ask, timidly. We've had this talk before, a few times. Being biracial in the Midwest didn't trouble anyone in our neighborhood. Or hardly anyone at our school. The population of Saginaw is pretty even when it comes to race, and I lived in a predominantly black area. But still, there were a few times when someone would ask her or me why we were together.
Why do you only date white guys? Her friends would ask her. Why don't you date a white girl?
Trashy girls with white eyeliner and gel pens shoved into their mock designer Kmart bags would ask me. Nothing against Kmart. I always liked that store before it closed down. Well, except the sticky floors. They were the worst. Dakota slurps on the end of her straw for a few seconds. When she pulls away, she has a dot of whipped cream on the corner of her lip. I fight my instinct to gently swipe it away.
Remember when we would sit in Starbucks in Saginaw for hours?
And just like that, she's closing off her real complaint. I don't push her to talk about it any longer. I never have. I nod.
And we would give them fake names every time?
She laughs. And that one time, that lady got so pissed because she couldn't spell Hermione and she refused to write our names on the cups anymore? Her laughter is real now, and suddenly I'm 15, running down the street after a rebellious Dakota who has leaned over the counter and stolen the woman's marker right from her apron. It was snowing that day, and we were covered in dirty brown slush by the time we made it home. My mom was confused when Dakota shouted that we were running from the cops as we ran up the stairs of my old house. I join her soft reverie. We actually thought the cops would waste their time on two teenagers stealing a marker. A few customers look in our direction, but it's pretty packed in here, so they are quick to find something else to look at, something more entertaining than an awkward coffee date between two exes. Carter said that the woman told him we were banned from there, she adds, her gaze growing somber. The mention of Carter prickles at the back of my neck. Dakota must see something in my eyes because she reaches across and puts her hand on mine. I've always let her. Taking a page from her book, I change the subject. We had some good times in Michigan. Dakota tilts her head and the light above us hits her hair, making her glow. I haven't realized just how lonely I've been lately. Aside from Nora's quick touch, I haven't been touched in months. I haven't been kissed in months. I haven't even hugged anyone except Tessa and my mom since the last time Dakota came to visit me in Washington. Yeah, we did, she says. Until you left me. Chapter 7. I'm wondering if my expression looks anything close to how I feel. I wouldn't be surprised if it did. My neck definitely jerked when she said that. She had to have seen that, is all I can think as I stare at her incredulously and wait for her to take back the harsh words. What? She asks, deadpan. There is no way she actually... I didn't want to leave. It's not like I had a choice. I keep my voice quiet, but I hope she can hear the sincerity in my words. The guy at the next table looks up at us for a second, then turns his attention back to his laptop. I grab both of her hands on the table and gently squeeze them between mine. I catch on to what she's doing. She's upset about school, so she's projecting her anger and stress onto me. She always has, and I've always let her. That doesn't change the fact that you did. You left. Carter was gone, my dad. I wouldn't have gone anywhere if I'd had a say in it. My mom was moving, and staying for my senior year of high school wasn't a convincing enough reason for her to let me stay in Michigan. You know that. I'm gentle with her, the way I would be with a wounded animal lashing out at anyone who approaches. Her anger is deflated instantly, and she sighs. I know, I'm sorry. Her shoulders slump and she looks up at me. You can always talk to me about anything, I remind her. I know how it feels to be a small person in such a big city. I haven't really heard her talk about any friends except Maggie, and now I know she's friends with Aiden for some awful reason that I don't understand, but I don't think I want to inquire too deeply about the way she spun for him. Dakota looks toward the door and sighs again. I've never heard a person sigh so much in my life. I'm fine. I'll be fine. I just needed to vent, I guess. That's not enough for me. You aren't fine, Baby Beans, I say, instinctively using her old nickname. Her wince quickly shifts to a shy smile, and I sit back and let the familiarity of us take over. She's softening now, finally, and it makes me feel less awkward around her. Really? Dakota's chair drags against the floor as she moves it closer to mine. That was a cheap shot. I smile, staying silent and shaking my head. I didn't use the name in order to gain some advantage. I had called her that by accident one day. I honestly have no idea why, and it just stuck. She melted then, and she's melting now. It just slipped out without me thinking, but I can't say that I'm not happy when she leans her head against my arm, wrapping her hand around it. The silly, accidental nickname has always had the same effect on her. I've always loved it. You're so solid now, she says, squeezing my biceps. When did that happen? I've been working out more, and I'd be lying if I said I didn't want her to notice. But now that she has noticed, together with her nearness, it makes me slightly shy. Dakota's hands run up and down my arm, and I gently brush her curly hair away from my face. I don't know, I finally respond, my voice sounding much softer than I intended. Her fingers are still playing at my skin, tracing phantom shapes onto it, making goosebumps rise. I've been running a lot, and my building has a gym. I don't use it often, honestly, but I run almost every day. It feels so good to be touched. I'd forgotten just how good it feels to have simple companionship, let alone actually feeling the warmth of another person. The image of Nora's nails raking down my stomach flashes through my mind and I shiver. Dakota's touch is different, softer. She knows just how to touch me, what I'm used to. Nora's touch sent waves through me. This touch is calming. Why am I thinking about Nora? Dakota continues to caress me while I try to push Nora from my head. I feel slightly embarrassed by her attention, but at the same time it feels really good to have my hard work noticed. I've changed my entire body over the last 2 years, and I'm glad she seems to appreciate it. She was always the prettier one in our relationship, and maybe my new physique will make her want to touch me more, maybe even spend more time with me. It's a shallow, desperate thought, but it's all I've got right now when it comes to holding on to Dakota. She's even more beautiful now than she used to be, and I imagine she will continue to grow more and more beautiful as she transforms into a woman. We used to plan becoming adults together. We would have 2 kids, she said, even though I kind of wanted 4. The world felt so different then, and this idea that we could grow up to be anything we wanted seemed so tangible. When you're submerged in a small town in the Midwest, bright lights and big cities seem so far-fetched to most, but they didn't to Dakota. She always wanted more. Her mom was an aspiring actress who moved to Chicago to get into a theater production and thereby become a massive star. It never happened. The city stole her soul and she became addicted to the late nights and the things that keep you awake to enjoy them. She never managed to get out, and Dakota has always been determined to do what her mom couldn't, make it. She leans closer. Her hair tickles my nose and I sink farther back into the chair. Tomorrow my meltdown will seem funny, she says, sitting back up in her chair, turning the conversation away from me. And truth be told, I'm glad for it. I tell her I agree that tomorrow everything will look different, better, and that if she needs anything, I'm only a call away. We sit in comfortable silence for a few minutes before Dakota's phone starts to ring. As she talks, I push a napkin around the table and then start tearing the paper into little pieces. Finally, she chirps into the phone, "I'll be there, save me a spot," and shoves it into her bag. She abruptly stands and throws her bag on her shoulder. "That was Aiden." She takes a long slurp of her Frappuccino. My chest tightens and I stand up too. "There's an audition and he's going to save me a spot. It's for an online ad for the Academy. I gotta go, but thanks for the coffee. We need to catch up again soon." She rests her hand on my shoulder when she kisses my cheek. And after that flurry, she's gone. Her half-full Frappuccino remains across from me, mocking my loneliness. Chapter 8. The entire walk home, I keep thinking, A, that was weird. B, I can't stand Aiden and his creepy white hair and long legs, and what the hell does he want with her anyway? C, he's probably trying to convert her to the dark side, but I'm on to him. When I open the apartment door, I'm met by the thick scent of vanilla. Either Tessa has gone overboard on the body spray again, or someone is baking. I'm praying for baking. The smell of it comforts me. My childhood home was always full of the sweetest smells of chocolate chip cookies and maple squares, and I don't really want to be feeling this way about some body spray. The bait and switch would be too similar to what I just had with Dakota. I toss my keys onto the wooden entry table and cringe when my Red Wings keychain chips off a flake of the wood. My mom gave me this table when I moved to New York and made me promise that I would take care of it. It was a gift from my grandma, and my mom holds anything associated with her late mother above nearly everything else, particularly since there isn't much left, especially after Hardin shattered an entire cabinet of cherished dishes. My grandma was a lovely woman, my mom tells me. I only have one really strong memory of her, and in it she is anything but lovely. I was about 6 at the time, and she caught me stealing a handful of peanuts from a massive barrel at the grocery store in town. I had a mouth and pocket full of them in the back seat of her station wagon. I don't remember why I did it, or if I even understood what I was doing, but when she turned around to check on me, she found me cracking open shells and chomping away. When she slammed on the brakes, I choked on part of a shell. She thought I was faking it, which only made her more upset. I coughed the lodged chunks out of my throat and tried to catch my breath as she busted a U-turn right in the center of the highway, ignoring the honks from understandably angry drivers, and drove my butt back to the store. She made me admit what I had done and apologize not only to the clerk, but also to the manager. I was humiliated, but I never stole again. She passed away when I was in middle school, leaving behind two daughters who couldn't be more opposite from each other. The rest of my information about her comes from my Aunt Reese, who makes it sound like she was a tornado compared to the rest of my calm family. No one messed with anyone with the last name Tucker, my mom's maiden name, lest they had to deal with Grandma Nicolette. Aunt Reese is a cop's widow, with big blonde hair teased and sprayed high enough to hold her abundance of opinions. I always liked being around her and her husband, Keith, before he passed away. She was always happy, always so funny, and she snorted when she laughed. Uncle Keith, who I automatically thought was awesome because he was a cop, always gave me hockey trading cards when I saw him. I remember wishing he had been my dad a few times. Pitiful, yes, but sometimes I just wanted another guy around. To this day, I remember when he died, and the gut-wrenching screams of my aunt resounding through the hallways, and then the way my mom's face was so pale and her hands so shaky when she told me, "Everything's fine. Go back to bed, sweetheart." Keith's death turned everyone upside down, especially Reese. She nearly got her home foreclosed on because she was just that sad. She no longer had any interest in life, let alone pulling out a checkbook to write a check from an account full of blood money her husband's life insurance had deposited there. She wasn't cooking, cleaning, or dressing herself. She always took care of her children, though. The toddlers were bathed and groomed, their little round bellies proof that she put her children above anyone else. Rumor has it that my aunt gave all the money from Keith's death to his oldest daughter from a previous marriage. I never met her, so I couldn't tell you if it's true or not. Reese and my mom were close their entire lives, being only 2 years apart in age. While Aunt Reese has only visited Washington once, they talk on the phone a lot. My grandma's death didn't seem to affect Reese the same way it did my mom. My mom dealt with it with a gentle approach and a lot of baking. Still, it was hard on her. And this table that I just scratched is about the only thing she has left.
Bad son I am.
Hello? Tessa calls from the kitchen, interrupting the picture of little Yodas swimming around in my head. I bend down to remove my shoes and spare the spotless old wood floors. Tessa spent all of last week polishing them, and I learned quickly not to wear my shoes inside for a while. For every footprint, I swear she spent 20 minutes on the floor with the little polisher tool in her hand. Given all the crap on New York's streets, probably best to just always do that anyway, I guess. Hello? Tessa repeats, her voice closer now. When I look up, she's standing a few feet from me. You scared me, she says, her eyes meeting mine. She's been so nervous since someone broke into the apartment on the first floor a couple months back. She doesn't say it much, but I can tell by her anxious glance to the door every time there's a creak in the hallway. Tessa's wearing a WCU t-shirt, and her black leggings are covered in what appears to be flour. Sorry, you okay? I ask. The dark hollows under her eyes are evidence that she's not. Yeah, of course, she smiles, shifting her feet. I'm baking, and how can anything be wrong when you're doing that? Her words turn into a wry laugh. Nora's here, too, in the kitchen, she adds. My brain skips past the latter part for now. My mom would be proud. I smile at her and toss my jacket on the arm of the chair. Tessa eyes it, but decides to let this slide. Aside from the cleaning, she's a great roommate. She gives me my time and space in the apartment, and when she is here, I like her company. She's my best friend, and she's not in the best place right now.
Yes!
I hear Nora yell. Tessa rolls her eyes, and I shoot her a questioning look, to which she just nods her head toward the kitchen. Thank God, she says sarcastically as I follow her into the kitchen. The sweet scent grows stronger with each step. Tessa walks straight to the small cart we call an island. At least 10 baking pans are stacked on top of one another on the small space. Tessa lets me in on their reason for celebration. She must have gotten this batch right. We took over your kitchen, Nora tells me.
Her greenish-brown eyes catch mine for a moment before she looks over at the mess. "Hey, Sophia Nora De Laurentiis," I say, opening the fridge and grabbing a water. Hearing Sophia, Tessa opens her mouth to correct me, but then I think she gets my little joke and doesn't say anything. For her part, Nora says, "Hey, Landon," and barely looks up from her task. I try not to stare at the streaks of purple icing smeared on the chest of her black shirt, which is pretty tight, stretched out over her breasts, and the purple icing so bright. "Look away, Landon." I look down at the purple mess in front of her, except it's not a mess. It's a three-layer cake, painted purple and covered in big lilac and white flowers. The center of the icing flower is yellow, dusted with glitter. The cake almost looks fake because the icing is so detailed. The candy flowers look as if they could actually have a lovely scent. And before I realize what I'm doing, I lean down and take a whiff. A small giggle sounds from Nora, and I look up at her. She's watching me like I'm animated. She's really very beautiful. The high angles of her cheekbones make her look like a goddess. She's exotic-looking with her tan skin and light brown eyes. Her hair is so dark it's shining under the buzzing light in the ceiling. I need to fix that light. A knock at the front door interrupts my stare fest. "I got it," Tessa says, then adds with a smile, "It's so pretty, right?" She nudges Nora's hip with her spatula and heads to the door. I'm happy to see her smiling. Nora blushes and turns her chin down. She hides her hands behind her back. "Indeed it is," I agree. Reaching over, I cup my fingers under her chin and lift her face up to me. She gasps, full lips opening under my touch. My spine tingles when she jerks away. "Why, oh why did I just touch her like that? I'm an idiot. And embarrassed. An embarrassed idiot." This seems to be a recurring theme when she's around. In my defense, she started the random touching the other day with the dark fingernails on the naked stomach bit. Nora's eyes remain on me. A touch of boredom is there, hidden behind the sheepish pride in her edible creation. I get the feeling that it takes a lot to please this woman. "What?" she says, like I'm halfway between being rude to and flattering her. I shrug. "Nothing." I lick my lips, and her eyes scan my face, resting on my mouth. Her energy is kinetic. There's something insanely electric about this woman. Before my thought can finish, she's crossing the small space between us and has wrapped her hands around me, resting them behind my neck. Her mouth is harsh at first, as her lips crush against mine. My mouth opens, welcoming her after I get over the initial shock of her action. Her lips are warm, and her kiss is unforgiving as she slides her tongue over mine. I fight the urge to pull her closer and let the kiss soak into me. Nora's hands are moving from my neck now. Her hands are small, but not dainty in the least. She has long crimson nails today. She must get them done a lot. Her hands are sprawled out, rubbing against the tight muscles on my chest. Kissing, teasing, kissing. Kissing her is like touching hot wax. The brisk burn of surprise stings, but the burn quickly fades into the opposite, transforming into something else entirely, something softer. My hands find her hips and I push her body against the counter. Soft moans escape her and her teeth bite at my bottom lip. My body responds before I can stop it. I try to take a step back so I won't be pressing my arousal into her, but she's not having it. She grips the top of my sweats and pulls me flush against her soft body. She's wearing a tight shirt and even tighter leggings. I know she can feel every inch of me pressing against her. "My God," she breathes into my mouth. I sigh into her. She twists and pulls away, and instantly I feel a pang of emptiness. Her red fingernail taps me on the tip of my nose, and she smiles at me, cheeks red, lips swollen from our kiss. "Well, that was unexpected." Her hand covers my mouth, and she pinches her bottom lip between her thumb and forefinger. "Unexpected? You think so?" I play it cool, leaning against the counter. I rest my elbows on the cold stone and try to think of something intelligent to say. My body is still humming,
silent electricity shooting through my veins while she looks like she's completely unaffected. What was that about? I decide to be bold, like her, at least for a moment. "Why did you kiss me?" I question. She watches me, eyes narrowing, and takes a deep breath. The bottom of her shirt is pushed up slightly, caught on the tanned curve of her hip. She's distracting me in every way without even trying. "Why?" she asks, seeming genuinely puzzled. Her hair escapes from behind her ear and she pushes it back. Her neck is exposed. It seems to be begging for my lips to cover her skin. "Didn't you want me to?"
"Yeah, I did," would sound desperate. "No, I didn't," would sound rude. I struggle with the right answer. It's not that I wanted her to kiss me. On the other hand, I didn't not want her to kiss me. I'm confusing myself, so I know if I try to explain it to her, it will be an even bigger jumbled mess. As I stand there in stupid silence, she suddenly looks bored again, and I watch as the heat around her fades into a warm blur. But then she quickly changes the subject.
"You should come out with me and my roommates tonight."
"Okay."
Part of me wants to continue the conversation and find out why she kissed me in the first place, but I figure that she clearly doesn't want to talk about it, so I won't push it. I don't want to make her uncomfortable or give her the impression that I didn't enjoy it. I'm trying to learn how to adult. It's getting easier each month, but sometimes I forget that instant intimacy is something only young people desire. If we were teenagers, her kissing me would automatically make us committed to each other in some way. But adult dating is so much more complicated. It's a much slower process. It's usually like this. You meet someone through your friend, you hit it off, you go on a date. By the end of date number 2, you usually kiss. By 5 dates, you've slept together. 12 dates before you start sleeping over on a regular basis. A year before you move in together. Another 2, you get married. You buy a house, a baby follows. Sometimes the last 2 are reversed, but most of the time this seems like how it goes, according to television and romantic movies. Sure, not for people like Harden and Tessa, who clearly didn't Google the Spark Notes of Dating 101 and moved in together within 5 months of meeting, but still. "Is that a no?" she presses. I shake my head, trying to remember what we were talking about. Her roommates. Oh yeah, going out with her roommates. I look toward the living room when I hear Tessa talking to someone, and when I turn back to Nora, she's stretching, holding her arms up in the air, exposing more skin. She's tall and curvy. She looks to be at least 5'7". It's distracting, for sure. "Where will you be going?" I ask. I don't want to decline, I'm just curious. "I don't know yet, honestly."
She grabs her cell phone from the counter and swipes her finger over the screen.
"Let me ask. We have this group chat that I usually ignore because it's mostly just 3 horny chicks spamming pictures of hot, naked men, but I'll ask."
I laugh. "Sounds like my kind of chat." I immediately recoil at my own joke, but humor fills her eyes. Why won't my mouth just stay closed around her? I need a lameness filter. Though, if I couldn't say anything embarrassing around her, I probably wouldn't have much to say at all.
"Well then," she laughs. My awkwardness is drowned out by the sound. Her laughter is light, like she doesn't have a care in the world. I want to hear the sound again. Sometimes I try too hard, I admit, laughing with her. She tilts her chin up at me.
"You don't say."
Her lips are pouty now, as if she's testing me. It's like they are begging me to kiss them again. Her phone starts to play the theme song from a show I immediately recognize. I raise one eyebrow. "Parks and Rec? I didn't think you were the type," I tease. I loved that show until the internet stole it from the actual fans and turned it into a cool, meme-worthy thing that I can't wrap my mind around. She quickly ignores the call, but the phone starts ringing again and Nora immediately swipes to ignore it and puts the phone on the counter. I consider asking her why she did that, just to make sure she's okay. I can't help it.
It's become some sort of habit of mine, making sure everyone is okay. Before I butt into Nora's business, Tessa walks back into the kitchen, followed by a young man wearing a red work vest and utility belt. He's here to fix the garbage disposal, she explains. The man smiles at her, looking at her for a beat too long. We have a garbage disposal? I ask. This is news to me. Both women look at each other and do that thing where women use their eyes to say, "Oh, men," like back in the 50s. Not fair. I help with dishes. I load them, I scrub them, I dry the silverware if Tessa doesn't beat me to it. So I'm not just a dumb dude who doesn't know there's a garbage disposal because I'm lazy. I just hadn't noticed it. Or used it. Come to think of it, I don't think I've ever used a garbage disposal in my life. Nora grabs her phone from the counter. It's lighting up like it's ringing again, but she must have switched it to silent. Her eyes close and she sighs. I better go, she announces. Her eyes move back down to her phone. She shoves it into the pocket of her jacket, which is hanging on the back of the chair, and which she then grabs. I move to help her and hold the jacket behind her as she maneuvers into it.
The repairman takes notice of her, watching her as she hugs Tessa and then kisses me on the cheek.
Something hot, with a shot of bitter, boils inside of me as he stares at her ass. He's not even trying to hide it. Not that I blame him for wanting to look, but come on, be a little respectful. Before I smack some manners into the guy, Nora gives me a wave and says, I'll text you when I know where we're going. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't interested, and just a tad worried that she won't actually text me. I don't know how many options she has lying around. I don't know how many competitors' stats. Oh, Lord, I'm comparing dating to sports. Again. I've repeatedly come to the conclusion that they're not that much different. But I'm better off looking at things from a different angle. But why am I already jumping to the conclusion that Nora wants to date me? Because she kissed me, then invited me to go out with her? Yes, that's exactly why. I can't tell if this is a regression in my adulting progress or not. When Nora is gone, Tessa looks like a little chipmunk that has just found a stash of nuts hidden under some leaves. What was that about? She asks nosily. I'm so used to her intrusiveness, it doesn't bother me. I run my hand over my chin, tugging slightly at the hair growing there. I lift my hands up in defense. I have no freaking clue. She just kissed me. I didn't even know she knew my name. She what? Tessa shrieks. This little sip of gossip is enough to keep Tessa Young going for days. I'll definitely hear about it later. My mom may hear about it, too. The repairman cocks his head to the side like he's listening to a daytime drama. He could at least be subtle about it. Then again, if I fixed appliances all day, I would want some comic relief or some kind of entertainment. Like adding a little splash of color to a black and white painting. I didn't know either. Well, I know she knew your name, Tessa says, being as literal as ever. I don't know. I'm just as confused as